Clinton calling from Fresno, California. Hello, Clinton.
Hello.
Welcome to the broadcast. So let me ask you, this is, and I have to tell you, Clinton, I don't get to do this, but I get to ask you the question, why are you Protestant?
Well, my reason for being Protestant is similar to you, actually. I was raised in a Baptist, not really a Baptist home per se, but I was raised in a Baptist church. And so I was really raised Protestant. And when I got out of high school, I started going through a phase where I questioned my faith. And I was drawn to some books on philosophy, theology, and apologetics, where I was able to learn the reason behind the Christian faith that it can be defended rationally. But I also investigated the claims of Catholic thinkers as well. And I really respect a lot of Catholic thinkers, but I would say that I'm just not really convinced by the doctrines. And I think it would be a lot easier if I could become convinced of the authority of the Catholic Church, as I think Trent mentioned earlier. But it's kind of difficult when so many Catholic doctrines I don't think that they're supported in Scripture, but I think that that a number of them are actually contradict what's taught in Scripture.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, and let's put this to Trent. So you've said basically the reason why you're Protestant is because there are a number of doctrines that the Catholic Church teaches that are contradicted in the Bible. So, Clinton, give one of those to Trent right now. What is the one that really bugs you the most?
The doctrine of Mary has been on my mind a lot lately.
Okay.
I would say there's several beliefs that Catholics have about Mary that don't really sit well with me.
What's the let's get the one that is the absolute craziest in your mind.
Yeah, I think probably her perpetual virginity is the one that doesn't really sit very well with me.
Got it. All right, Trent.
Well, Clinton, that's an interesting one to pick. By the way, I also have to ask as a personal note, we haven't met before, have we?
Yes, we have.
Am I speaking to Mr. Wilcox?
Yes, that's correct.
Tim, this is very funny. Clinton and I share a deep bond of pro-life apologetics, and I've been in Fresno to speak before on the issue, and Clinton's a very sharp fellow when it comes to dialoguing with the pro-choice advocate. So it's very enjoyable to have a fellow brother pro-life apologist call me to discuss. And in the pro-life world, Tim, it's very funny that really what really kicked off the pro-life movement in the United States were the Catholics. Right. And then the Protestants got on board a decade later. So a lot of conversations about Catholics and Protestants happens in these pro-life groups.
Absolutely.
Clinton, do you see that happen? You know, a lot.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of gotten to the point now where when I go to a pro-life function, one of the first questions I'm asked is what parish I'm with.
Right. Well, Clinton, I think let's go back to your point. It's interesting you picked the perpetual virginity of Mary as something you find as a Catholic doctrine as being problematic, because there are many Protestants who actually supported this doctrine. In fact, Martin Luther was very adamant that Mary was a virgin before, during, and after the birth of Christ. So, I mean, so Luther actually, as you know, archetypal Protestant,
yeah,
he actually believed in this. And so, it's not necessarily a distinctly Catholic doctrine. He, using sola scriptura, came to it as well.
And but so did others like Calvin and Wesley, even 200 years later. Right?
Well, I thought Calvin had more problems with it.
He was a little shaky, but yes.
So is there a particular passage in scripture, Clinton, that you think contradicts the notion that Mary was a virgin her whole life, or...
Yeah, unfortunately, I was actually told about this program about a half an hour ago, so I'm not really prepared.
I'm guessing it's probably the passages that speak of the brothers of the Lord.
Yeah, those are some. There's also the passage that says that Mary and Joseph did not have relations until she'd given birth.
Matthew 1:25.
Great.
Okay, well, let me just address both of those then for you to look at, and then we'll go from there. First, the passage in Matthew 1:25, it says, that Joseph and Mary did not have relations. He did not know her until Jesus was born. Now, oftentimes in the English language, the word until implies a reversal, but it doesn't always imply a reversal, so it's dangerous to always read that into the text. I know in 2 Samuel 6:23 it says that Micah was childless until the day of her death. That doesn't mean that she started having children after that point. And what's interesting, Clinton, about that particular verse is that John Calvin, in his commentaries on Matthew, he says you can't read that one way or the other about the doctrine of the perpetual virginity of Mary. And so I don't think that, and there's also, I forget which passage it is, but St. Paul tells Timothy to teach and preach until he arrives. Right. And it doesn't mean he's going to stop doing it once he gets there.
You know, one of my favorites, Trent, is 1 Corinthians 15:25, where St. Paul says Christ must reign until God has placed all enemies under his feet.
But he won't stop reigning after that
point. That's right. Well, Luke 1:33 says he shall reign forever and ever.
So that would be my first answer on that, Clinton. And the second one, on the brothers of the Lord, I think, you know, the word that we see in the New Testament rendered brother is adelphoi, which can mean literal brother, but it can also mean kin or relative. It's used that way in the Septuagint. For example, Lot and Abram are described as adelphoi, even though they weren't brothers. They had an uncle-nephew relationship. In the New Testament, also in John 19:25, there's a sister of Mary with the same name, the wife of Clopas, right?
That's right.
But it would be very, very odd for in one family to have two daughters both named Mary. So this would seem to imply that adelphoi or adelphes, what would it be for
Adelphi.
Sister? Adelphi would be used there to be kin. So I would say that the word adelphoi, when the New Testament speaks about the brothers of Christ, it doesn't necessarily have to mean kin. One thing you could look up, which I find really interesting, is an article by a Protestant scholar named Richard Baucom. So he has no dog in this fight at all, but he thinks that the reference to brothers refers to younger siblings, what I'm going for here is that they wouldn't be correcting Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm having a little bit of a.
Oh, I see. So when you're talking about in John 7, where the quote unquote brothers of the Lord are correcting Jesus.
Right, because here's the thing, Clinton. Are you still with me? I hate to be droning on and on.
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Here's the situation. Let me collect my thoughts a bit. If these were biological siblings of Jesus's, they would all have to be his younger siblings because we know Jesus is Mary's firstborn.
Right.
Luke is very clear on that. But the problem is we see in John 7 and other places they're correcting Jesus, basically telling him he's out of his mind, he shouldn't go to Jerusalem. And what Baucom argues as a Protestant scholar is that it's very odd, it's unheard of in ancient Palestine for younger siblings to correct their elders.
Publicly.
To publicly do this.
Right.
And so it would make more sense if perhaps these are related kin or half-siblings that were actually older than Jesus. So those might be two sources, but I guess, Clinton, I would recommend if you want to dive into the issue more, what Tim has written, a great book, Behold Your Mother, has, two or three chapters on the subject?
Yes, three.
So, and actually, if you email me, Clinton, since I know you'll have that from our personal correspondence, I'd be happy to send you an electronic version of the book to look at and then keep the dialogue going. Would that be helpful?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I'll tell you what, Clinton, also with the Brothers of the Lord, as you know, Trent, when you have the Brothers of the Lord explicitly named in Matthew 13:55, it's James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, and yet, as the Catechism of the Catholic Church points out in paragraph 500, just 14 chapters later in Matthew 27:56.
They reappear again. Two of them do.
Two of them, James and Joseph, but this time their mama is mentioned and it's not Mary.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have the brothers of the Lord named as having a mother that's not Mary. And then you have in Galatians 1:19, I'm telling you, Trent and Clinton, this was the one that did me in years ago as mm-hmm. a Protestant, is in Galatians 1:19 when St. Paul, mm-hmm. speaks about James, the brother of the Lord, he refers to him as an apostle.
Right.
John Calvin used this argument as well,
mm-hmm.
That you mentioned earlier, Trent. But he says this brother of the Lord named James is also an apostle. Well, there's only two Jameses that are apostles, James the son of Zebedee, and according to Luke 6:15-16, James the son of Alphaeus. And that's
James the Lesser.
James the Lesser,
right.
And his dad is called Alphaeus, and not Joseph. So at any rate, Clinton, I do recommend as well the book Behold Your Mother. We'll shoot it out to you. There's a lot of reasons the Catholic Church gives for all of her teachings. Really appreciate your call, Clinton. God bless you.